Jim Moody here, live in the BX, five-star podcast you're listening to, man. The Pyramid of Podcasts and the rest of these motherfuckers is on some Stonehenge bullshit. So spread this shit around. We try to get down every Monday to give you some good New York street talk. This, that, and the third with G. Moody. Going to get into it right now. We got a segment called Why. Now, I'm riding the 4 train. I'm going through the BX. And, you know, there are ads on the train. So one particular ad stuck out. It was an ad for medication for the opioid user. Very compassionate. Showing a lot of humanity for the opioid user. Even the cops got Narcan. They're mandated to carry medication in case they run across one of these opioid motherfuckers foaming at the mouth, ODing with their children. Now, very compassionate, right? So it brought me back to the time when I fucking grew up, basically in the crack era, when that shit kicked off with a ceremony. I saw this shit ruin families. I saw it destroy neighborhoods, actually in real time. Did I see any ads dealing with compassion for the crack user? Or did we see the legislators call for stiffer jail sentences for the crack user? Harsher penalties. The crack user was demonized and criminalized. This is how his or her addiction was treated. Why? I'm calling for the re-emergence of Charm School as it regards to recording artists. Now, Berry Gordy, the founder of Motown, spearheaded this shit. He had the presence of mind to think like, yo, I gotta polish up some of these artists. You know, they come from different backgrounds, and when they're conducting interviews, I want them to sound their best. I want them to look their best because we are presenting them to the world, so I want them to look good for their families and not embarrass Motown and themselves. So I'm calling for the re-emergence of Charm School. You gotta go through it. Now, I saw Cardi B. She posted a video. I like Cardi B. She's from the BX, so New Yorker. So I read the comments on her video, replying to it. One motherfucker said, yo, this broad sounds like Rocky Balboa. It's true. So, Charm School is needed. How could a woman sound like fucking Rocky Balboa? That was bugged out. Charm School would help that. You could come across intellectual. You could come across intelligent. Somebody views your video and you're a woman and they say you sound like Rocky Balboa. It's time for Charm School, man. Got me to thinking as well. What if DMX had to go through Charm School at Def Jam? Where Def Jam was scared that if he got on an interview, he would utter the N-word thousands of times before the 30-second mark. You need to bring back Charm School to help these young artists out because they look bugged out, man. I want to give a shout out to Berry Gordy and Motown for even coming up with such a thing. But it should come back. Bring back Charm School so a woman doesn't sound like Rocky Balboa as she presents herself to the world. G Moody here, live in the BX. We want to give a shout out to all the fans that tune in every Monday to get thoroughly entertained with some good talk, independent thinking, good music, and overall fun. That's what we have on This, That, and the Third with G Moody. We have fun. New York style podcasting done in a conversational way. I talk to you like you're right next to me. This is how we do it on This, That, and the Third with G Moody. Let's kick this shit off. We had a great night in Brooklyn. It was Brownsville Old Timers Day. I've been coming out to Brownsville Old Timers Day since 1981. And cats from around the country who are from Brownsville, Brooklyn, come back for Old Timers Day. It's been going on for 56 years. So I had a great time. I saw all my friends. We had a good conversation with a Brownsville Brooklynite, World Be Free, NBA All-Star, Hall of Famer. He comes back every year So basically, it's a big neighborhood block party going on for 56 years in Brooklyn. Unfortunately, at the end, when everything was closing down, we had some idiots decide to shoot up in a block party. So, of course, there's pandemonium, there's panic, people are stampeding, trying to get out of the area, and a lot of people got hurt, and one person was unfortunately killed. So I want to send condolences to that family. Been coming out here since 1981, never had no issues. This was unusual. But prior to that, we had a great time, and fortunately for me, I left before the carnage took place, so I didn't see anything, so it's not in my mind, and it doesn't sum up the time I had in Brownsville, Brooklyn. Great concerts, great food, great people, but you have some kids, because no grown-up, no adult, no old-timer is going to do some grimy shit at old-timer's day. So some of these kids don't have any respect for tradition, life, culture, and they don't have respect for their own lives. So they ruined an otherwise fantastic event that's been going on for 56 years. But I want to shout out all the Brownsville people who was there having a good time, just like myself and all my friends that I went to school with. Cats come back, we chill, we barbecue. That is what it's all about. That's really what it is. Just unfortunate that some bullshit had to happen at the very end. We're going to get into it. We podcasted live from Brownsville, Brooklyn, on a great occasion. Here we go. G Moody Podcast, this down and third with G Moody Live, Brownsville Old Timers Day. I'm with my man, Sean Hill, classmate, Brownsville veteran, slash 90s. Motherfuckers from Brooklyn know what that is. The 90s in Brownsville, basically family, so we here cooling out. My man, Sean Hill, basically he's from Brownsville. He comes out here all the time, every Old Timers Day. So let me get you, I ask everybody who's from this area, people ask me, like, yo, you from Brownsville, it's a bad neighborhood. Why do you say it was such a good time growing up there? And I tell motherfuckers, we had the best time, and they can't understand it. So I want to, you know, get feedback from you. How was it growing up, 90s slash Brownsville?
It was rough, but depending on who you are, that determined on the outcome of things. You know what I'm saying? If you was known, you was good. If you was an outsider, it might not have went your way all the time. You know what I'm saying? But coming playing ball, you can get brotherhoods out here, start seeing the same faces, playing against dudes in tournaments, street ball or whatever, and you develop a bond. And to this day, I see some of the people who I grew up playing against, played with, and we all meet here, and it's like one big family.
Tell the people what you do.
I'm a track worker. Basically, it's a construction job. We rip out track, build new track, and we service existing track. Well, one day we was working on a track, so we had to clear up, which is get out off the track so the train could come through. So we get up on the wall, on the bench wall, and as the train is going through, we look inside the cars, whatever. In the last car, as the train was going by at a slow speed, a dude was banging a chick in the last car.
And y'all all saw the shit. Damn, a matinee in the tunnels. G Moody with my man Sean Hill at Brownsville Old Timers Day. Erasmus Hall in the house, yo.
Yes, sir, E Hall 88.
Word up. This is Anna Durr with G Moody live at Brownsville Old Timers Day. I'm with a close friend. These motherfuckers raised me. I told you about them. I referred to these guys. This is my man, William Finney, a.k.a. Wolf. All black people have nicknames. So these are the dudes that played ball and took me around and showed me the ropes. We talk about early New York City, early 80s basketball. Mark Jackson, Rod Strickland, these dudes played with them in the city, did they thing. The late, great Pearl Washington. So I'm here with my man, William Finney. I'm not going to call him his nickname. He grew up in Brownsville. He's a Brownsville veteran. So I'm getting an overall feel of what it was like growing up in a neighborhood that is known as being a bad neighborhood with negative connotations. So I want to ask you, how was it growing up here, because when I ask, when people ask me, I say I had the best time, and they can't believe it.
It was rough, but it seemed like it was a culture of discipline and hanging out. Either you went to school or you hung out. If you hung out, you did your thing. You didn't mess with the kids that went to school unless you tried to step into that life. If you wasn't about that life, you didn't step in that life. If you played ball or any type of sport, you had like a gold card. You could run around and hang out. People say, yo, 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 leave him alone. He plays sports. So you kind of had that little reputation. So once you built a certain lifestyle, the culture just absorbed you in. Being in law enforcement, everything I learned to prepare me was from Brownsville. My eye is from Brownsville. My head is always on a swivel. So growing up, we played ball. We ran around. We hung out in the projects. You know what I'm saying? We even, you know, smoked a little blunts every now and then back in the 80s. And in the projects back then, parents knew each other. So when they say village to raise a child, it really did. So it was fun. I would never trade it for anything in the world.
Wolf, Woolly Wolf summed it up perfectly, better than anyone I've talked to thus far. That's what we mean. He explained it. But yo, any Mike Tyson stories? Mike Tyson comes from Brownsville. Do you have any?
We got to be careful with Mike Tyson stories because he listens to your podcast. And I don't want him to come after me. But Mike know, because I confronted Mike Tyson back at Central State University. We had Athletes Day, so he came and did a little speech. We gave him a little award. So me and my man Doug Ward from Bed-Stuy, we confronted him. We was like, yo, it Ike, what up, baby? He's like, how y'all know to call me Ike? He says, Brownsville. He said, you from Brownsville? And I was like, yeah. Remember back in the days, you was robbing all of us. He said, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, so you was from Brownsville. You remember that, huh? I'm not going to go to the rest of the story, but let's just say I took a beating. It kept on ticking. And Mike Tyson was cool with me after that because he said I had heart.
Mike Tyson, Riddick Bowe, World Be Free, Pearl Washington. The list goes on, and Eddie Mustafa Muhammad, these are world champion boxers. The list goes on and on. It's a great lineage in Brownsville of all aspects, not just athletes. A lot of motherfuckers come from this area in New York City. This down the third with G Moody here, live at Brownsville Old Timers Day. I'm here with Elaine. Elaine was in Beaufort, South Carolina, and she has made the trip up here. You grew up in Brooklyn. You live in South Carolina now. Why was it great growing up here?
We looked out for one another. We fight each other, but nobody else better not fight us. We just always had each other's back. The projects used to go against each other to battle. Tilden versus Brown. You can't cross Belmont Avenue. Belmont, that was the truce line. But we always got each other back because we Brownsville never ran, never will.
Live Brownsville Old Timers Day with Elaine and G Moody.
Signing out. This, that, and the third.
Yeah. Thirsty Howl. Yes. Low life general. Prince. This is how you motherfuckers come through and stomp on us. G Moody Podcast live in Brownsville Old Timers Day. I'm home. I see all my brothers I grew up with. I got my man E right here. We used to play football, all that good shit. Explain to motherfuckers why Brownsville was great growing up, and people know it as a bad neighborhood, but why was it great growing up? Because I tell motherfuckers I had the greatest time growing up out this motherfucker.
Yeah, that's what Brownsville was about, man. Like, when we grew up, we was, like, playing football, basketball. Right now, as I'm talking, I remember we had battles, me and Gerald. I used to have to always hold Gerald. I never got the good end of it, but, you know, we used to go at it. I don't have no complaints with Brownsville, baby.
Brownsville basketball is highly intense. People that don't play harder than a motherfucker out here. Now, I'm talking about my man Gio. Gio wasn't a ball player per se. He was on some football shit, but when he played ball, it was mad intense. That's just how Brownsville people get down.
Because it was always dudes that was nice. So being that it was always dudes that was nice, shit, you got to keep your game up. You got to let them know, okay, we all same age, same, so you know some is nicer than others, but at the end of the day, you gotta dig it in.
Now, I'm here with my man Gio. Now, Gio, describe what it was growing up in the BK, man.
Brownsville was a place where it was 10,000 bullies, and 500 nice guys and shit. So you do the math and shit, you know what I'm saying? It's all about weathering the storm.
You got some Mike Tyson stories or something?
Well, I did have a fight with him in Marcus Junior High School. He tried to rob me from my book bag, but you know. But still, he's still a legend. What's up, man? He's still a legend from Brownsville, so you know.
Right, right.
But that's how it was back
then. That's how it was, yeah. So that's what we saying. Brownsville, we getting the whole thing, man. Brooklyn, G Moody Podcast with my man E, cats I grew up with.
Your parents raised you, and not only did they raise you, it was community.
Yes.
They raised everybody. If you lived in a building or apartment, everybody raised each other. Your parents,
oh, sure.
Somebody wasn't home, somebody else's parents was looking out.
Right.
Do this, get here. It was about community. The young kids today don't know about community.
Nope.
We made up games to play.
Yep.
They play video games. Big difference. That's why they don't have a thought pattern now.
Uh-huh.
But all in all, we were raised together. And we still family, not only friends, because we're not bounded by blood, but we are bounded by friendship.
And that's why we hear Brownsville people come back, Brownsville Old Timers Day. And that was Shaniqua Miles.
Yes, uh-huh. Shaniqua Miles.
We're coming back tomorrow for BBQing, barbecuing, and chilling out. I'm driving home with my man Traj.
Yeah.
Traj is talking about how in the projects, 5 percenters, was very popular, and cats would sell lessons. Right, so now we want to understand what the fuck that means. So Traj is going to kick this shit right now, what lessons was.
Right, well, with the 5% nation, there were lessons you had to study in order to become a 5%er. And when we were young, you had to buy these lessons. Now, anybody that wanted to become a 5%er had to go to one of the guides and buy the lessons at about $10 or $15. The thing was, you had to study the lessons and know the lessons. If you didn't, you were called into a cipher, you were questioned, and if your questions weren't right, you was beat the fuck down. And that's how a lot of cats got into the 5% nation, by getting beat the fuck down. Because there were cats that got beat 4 and 5 times before they were allowed to be in the nation. And once you were in the nation, then you got to change your name to one of the names that were in the alphabet. So you had your Born Justice, your Infinite Allah, your King Allah, you know, your Shamik, your Kendu. Everybody was able to pick their names. So, you know, it was an experience coming up.
What is a cipher? What happened to the cipher? Because people might not know what the fuck you're talking about. With, yo, it was a cipher. So what happened?
In the cipher is a 360-degree circle. So you were placed in the middle of the cipher, and the guards would ask you questions, such as, what is today's mathematics? And your answer had better been right. If it wasn't, then you were beat down right there.
Damn.
Right. So you had to be on point and have the knowledge and spit it cleanly to the cat's satisfaction.
No doubt. If it wasn't clean, if it wasn't crisp, if it wasn't precise, you was getting beat down. And that's how it was with the 5% nation. Yo, man, we're going to have to get some Chinese food. I'm starving.
Live podcast, my man Traj said, yo, we got to get some Chinese food. New York style podcasting, we're rolling through the streets. We got to get Chinese food. It's open. A lot of other cities, they close down at motherfucking 1 a.m. Yeah. We still keep going, New York City. That's why Traj could say, yo, gee, let's get some Chinese food. Shit is open.
That's right.
It's open. We have the option.
Yep, that's what we love. That's why we back home.
New York style podcasting, G Moody, Traj, traversing through Brooklyn, getting Chinese food. Like I said, this particular episode is dedicated to Brownsville. So I have some old timers because it is old timers week and day in Brownsville. And I'm an old timer. I just hit 50. So I am now an old timer. But I'm here with my friend Nat, who is a Brownsville veteran. He grew up in Brooklyn way before I was born. These cats grew up out here, so I'd like to get the overall feeling of what it was like growing up in Brooklyn and Brownsville in the 50s.
I moved to Brownsville in 1953 in the Van Dyke houses when they first opened up. We're originators, not invitators, first and foremost. And then when we grew up, there was a lot of Jews here in Brownsville, East New York. It was like a lot of Irish and Italians and shit like that lived there. But now times are changing. They're predominantly black and things are changing. But my biggest thing about Brownsville Day is this. When I grew up in Brownsville, when we had Brownsville Day, it started with Flugie Bar and Cookie Bar. Cookie Bar was in Canarsie. Flugie's was on Belmont and Sackman, I think it was. And they cooked for the kids every year before they played. I mean, the guys drinking, carrying on. But every year, I was like 11 or 12 years old, 10 or 11 years old, and I walked by the park one day in 284 Park on Stone and Sutter Avenue. That's where it all started from. That's the original spot. And then all of a sudden, they started feeding us kids and showing us the way to go. Then when I got older, I carried a torch and did the same thing, tried to do the same thing and give the kids.
All right, you said the projects, if you ran on the grass, you got caught, you were thrown out. And how clean was the projects? Like, it opened in when, 53?
When I was there in 1953, even the streets wasn't paved yet and stuff like that. They were still doing it. But if you was on the grass, when you had the caretakers, and you get grass stains or anything, if the cop catch you or even the caretaker catch you, if they write your name down, give it to housing would come and call your mother down and tell you that's one strike and two strikes you out.
Not three?
No, not three. And you got put out the project.
Now, when did you start to see the decline of the projects? What year did that take place?
When crack come around, when they started that, that's when the whole area changed. I mean, then you have people all strung out, people in the hallway doing whatever they were doing, robbing people. Because when I was a kid, we had gangs. They had gangs when I was growing up.
Well, what were the gangs?
The gang was the Roman Lords, Canarsie Chaplains, and everybody else. But what the whole thing was with them is that they never disrespect the parents. They had the Frenchmen. The Frenchmen did Brownsville. The Roman Lords did Van Dyke. And the Chaplain, Canarsie Chaplain did Canarsie Chaplains like that.
Tomahawks?
And wasn't no Tomahawks then.
This was before them.
That's right. This is when gangs were gangs, where they had like zip guns. You know, they make them up with the rubber band and all this other shit. That's what happened. When people fought, they fought at night. They never fought in the daytime, shoot people in the daytime. The gangs, they always fought at night, around, not when their parents knew anything.
So they had like a sort of Geneva Convention rules regarding warfare.
Right. It was fought for territory, I guess. You know, if you walk in my area, blah, blah, blah. Like, when people went to the library, that was Roman Lord territory. When they go to pool, it was the Frenchmen. So they had to break bread in peace and let them, okay, this time you can go here and go there to the pool. Nobody's going to mess with you. You know, you're wearing your colors, your sweaters, and everybody else and things like that. So
no killings, though, right?
Very few. They fought with their hands.
Right. Rumbles.
Right. That was the rule of thumb. If you was good with your hands, you fought. Everybody said fight fair, and that's what they did.
Street games. Did y'all play the games that I played? Skelly, all that stuff. Did y'all play that?
Right. We played a lot of street games like Rio Livio, Skelly. We played punch ball, stick ball if we could. When you black, you improvise.
Yeah, yeah.
And like I said, and all we did was do that, and we just ran around, and it was just a lot of fun, not realizing that we was in the hood.
My father told me Pickens Avenue was like Fifth Avenue. It was glorious. Pickens Avenue in Brooklyn with a lot of commercial stores. It's not the same anymore, but I got stories that it was like Fifth Avenue, and it's unbelievable that it was like that.
Right. When I grew up, Pickens Avenue was the spot. From Woolworth to you go there, and Belmont was another spot. Because the Jews controlled. They even had carts out there where they sell stuff.
Push carts.
Push carts, right. They would sell food and vegetables and stuff like that in the cart. They were just Jews. I mean, that's what they did. This area was mainly Jewish, like Amboy and everything else. And then they all, as the blacks and the Hispanic came in, they all moved out.
So how was getting along with Jewish, Italians, Irish? Did you guys play? Did y'all play together?
No.
No, the blacks stayed away?
Blacks stayed where they were, and the Jews did what they did. I mean, it wasn't like it was racial tension. It's just that everybody knew they speak. To me, there's nothing like Brownsville. They say this is a high crime area, but it didn't have to be. It was never a high crime area when I was growing up. Because, you know, they had factories in Newport and everything else. They had jobs. Now, there is no job. And you didn't have to have an education to get a job. But now, if you don't have an education, you ain't getting shit.
This editorial with G. Moody out here in Brownsville, Old Timers Day. Of course, Brownsville got the ball players, so ball players from back in the days come through. And not just regular ball players. We're talking about cats, D1, NBA players. I'm with one right now, my man James Majors. Brooklyn All-Star High School, Bishop Lachlan, right? Went to Seton Hall University. So the first question I want to ask you is about PJ Carlissimo. When Sprewell choked this motherfucker out, do you think he deserved it based on your interactions with him? Because he coached Seton Hall while you were there. So what was that shit like dealing with him as a coach? I hear he was a screamer.
Well, as soon as I heard the situation with Sprewell, I knew that PJ was up to his old tricks, because there was numerous occasions where quite a few of my teammates actually went after him and had to be separated by the assistant coaches. So when I heard that, I knew that PJ still had that mentality, oh, these are like college kids, but now you're working with grown men. He had to change from that mentality, which is the reason why I believe he's not in the NBA coaching today.
I figured that. I said there had to be a reason that Sprewell would go at this cat like that. And I remember you told me back in the days, yo, homeboy be on some crazy shit sometimes, so that style of coaching doesn't really work in the NBA.
Exactly, because I'll know another instance where he was coaching the Portland Trail Blazers, and you know that a West Coast team only comes to the East Coast one time. So Rod Strickland, being from the area in New York, wanted to stay back because they didn't have a game the following day. But PJ, again, with that coach's mentality from high school, made Rod get on the plane with the team as opposed to spending time with his family. So that caused a rift between him and Rod Strickland as well.
I knew it. Now we're going to talk about some basketball. We're going to talk about your days playing, you know, in the Big East Conference, Seton Hall University. Who was the best player that you played against in the Big East Conference in the mid-'80s? Who was the best player you say, yo, this dude is all right? Who's the best one?
Well, I have to say the best player, I'm not saying this because he's from my area, but it has to be Pearl Washington. Because Syracuse University, he was the guy nobody wanted to go up against on a nightly basis because you could get embarrassed.
Wow. Yeah, man, we grew up with Pearl, the late, great Pearl Washington. Homeboy was like a rock star in Brooklyn and all over the city. You had to come see this dude handle the ball. So my man James Majors was playing against those guys in the Big East Conference, Patrick Ewing, Chris Mullin. Now, you grew up in Brownsville. I watched you play as a kid. Now, I like to ask everybody who grew up in this part of Brooklyn, what is it about Brownsville that you can reflect on, that you look back on and say, man, I'm glad I grew up in that area? Why?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was speaking to a few of the fellas earlier, and I said, out of all the tournaments, Big East, overseas that I played in, nothing compared to the competition level that you were going to play in Howard Projects growing up. That was the best competition, and it groomed me to be tough, because if you couldn't take the physical punishment, you weren't getting on the court and you weren't getting a foul call, so you had to learn how to play through it. If you could play through that, and you could play anywhere in the world.
Absolutely. That's what I've said too. It's a environment and atmosphere that you have to play physical, and you get that early on in Brownsville, because everybody plays so physical and intense. Even the guys that don't play basketball, right?
Exactly. Because even, like I was saying before, because a lot of guys that played when I was coming up, and I'm actually blessed to have grown up at the time I did, because World Be Free, Jerry Reynolds, Pearl Washington, Phil Sellers, all these pros would come play with just the typical guys that's trying to come up and make a name for themselves. And this was the competition that helped me become the player that I actually became.
Yeah, man. We talk about Brooklyn Cat right here, did his thing. You played with Mark Jackson? What was your team in high school?
Bishop Lachlan Memorial High School.
Bishop Lachlan, my man.
State champions,
did his thing. Him and Mark. We're not talking about no slouch. Talking about my man James Majors. Went on to Seton Hall University, did his thing out there. Chilling now, living in New Jersey. About to move to Pennsylvania. A lot of snow out there. Get ready for that shit, yo. Who do you think is the best player in NBA history.
Can make an argument for Kareem being the number one, Jordan being number one. Another person other people forget about, the average 50 points and 25 rebounds in one season, Will Chamberlain. So there's open debate. I don't think that you can really pick one clear-cut GOAT of all time.
This Saturday, third with G. Moody, chilling in Brownsville with my man James Majors of Seton Hall University, Big East. And we are in the Big East, Brooklyn, Brownsville, talking some good sports. I'm going to close it out. We're going to talk to some more cats. Thanks to my man James Majors.
Thanks for having me. Hey, yo, tip of them boots, I got stomp out, get real, Sean Price, the nicest nigga
in Brownsville, word bomb, y'all niggas can't rap, word for damn. Brownsville Old Timers Day, I'm with a hip-hop legend. These are the cats that paved the way. These are the cats that made this art form respected. But now today is on some clown shit, honestly. So whenever I see these dudes, I always pay homage to the original hip-hop cats. I'm talking about my man Little Rodney C from the group Double Trouble and the first group that was on Saturday Night Live. So I'm going to talk to him about hip-hop and its early days. How do you feel about the art form now?
I'm a hip-hop pioneer. I helped to give birth to this genre of music we call hip-hop, right? So, in my day, I used to think it was only gonna be us. You know what I mean? And that we would be carrying the torch forever, right? That's not reality. You know what I mean? And because of the natural progression, right? That it just had to grow and expand. So now we're listening to different dialects of my baby. I look at hip hop like a baby that I helped to bring into the world. Mm-hmm. My baby 40 years old though. Mm. You know what I mean? And actually it's 46 years old. You know what I mean? Right. But my baby is actually 40. You know what I'm saying? Mm. So my baby's a grown ass man,
right,
or a grown ass woman.
It changed.
It ain't no baby no
right,
more.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So now, do I have a problem with what I'm hearing now? Yes and no. You know what I mean? Yes, because it don't have no real content. It don't have no substance. It don't feed us as a people. It just destroys us. You know what I mean? Yes, because they're keeping it going. You know what I mean? Because guess what? If it stopped with us, then what?
Word. Absolutely. Now, you mentioned you being a pioneer, you kind of starting this shit. When did you first see it and say, yo, I want to get down with this? When and where did you see that? And was it in a park? Was it in somebody's crib where you say, yo, I want to do that?
Well, I'm going to give you a little history, right? I'm originally from Brooklyn. I'm out of Red Hook. I moved from Red Hook to the Bronx on August 1st, 1973. That was 10 days before the birthday party that we have now for hip hop, which is August 11th, 73, right? I moved, I was 10 turning 11. My brother came home with an album called Hustlers Convention, and my brother played it for me. And I fell in love with that.
Lightning Rod.
Lightning Rod. I fell in love with that joint, right? And whenever my brother wasn't home, I would sneak to play it so I could learn the rhymes, right? And when I got about 13, 14, I went to, back then we called them jams, or, you know what I mean, or block parties. You know what I mean? I went to a jam. And I saw Grandmaster Flash, who was partners with Mean Gene, who is the father of the L Brothers and the Fantastic Five, right? And I went and I seen Flash and Mean Gene playing. And then I heard Cowboy, Keep Cowboy, God Bless the Dead, right? And Cowboy is the actual person who gave me my C, right? But I heard him on the mic, right? He was more like a party starter, kind of like the Busy Bee or Fat Man Scoop.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They didn't have no real rhymes, but they were like
party MCs.
Yeah, get the party going.
Right.
Okay. And I heard Cowboy on the mic, right? Then shortly after that, I seen Kid Creole and his brother Grandmaster Melly Mel. I seen them do a back and forth, right? And when I saw it, I said immediately, I could do that shit. And not only can I do that, I could do it well. So I start putting pen to paper and started writing my rhymes. You know what I mean? And originally I was with a group called the Magnificent Seven. Then I moved on to the Funky Four. And then I ended up leaving them and I started Double Trouble with my man KK Rockwell. Mm. And we ended up doing the movie Wild Style. You know, and I mean, like, I got a long history, man.
Yes,
I got
yes.
I got 40 years in this game.
Right, right. Yeah, you're one of the pioneers, man. You're no doubt about it, man. So I like to talk to you guys because, yo, like, did you ever think that it would really be this big?
Nobody thought it would be this big, right? I don't think there was nobody who could actually foresee, you know what I mean, what we did in the streets turning into a multi-billion dollar industry.
Right.
None of us. Now, we hoped for a bigger audience, meaning radio. You know what I mean? Like,
because it was just tapes.
In my day, right? In my day, the radio made you legitimate. You know what I mean? So we wanted radio. You know what I mean? And, you know, once we got it, I mean, there's stories behind the stories behind the story.
Right, right, right.
So what I say is politics and politricks.
Right.
You know what I mean? I got caught up in both, the politics and the politricks.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? But I still got love for this art form because I helped to give birth to this.
Hell yeah, hell yeah. Now, how did you guys get on Saturday Night Live? First hip-hop group on Saturday Night Live, right?
That's a very, 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 very long story.
And Sha-Rock was with y'all, right?
Yes.
Now, how did she get in the crew? Did any of the members say, oh, homegirl ain't that nice? Was there any things like that?
No. Well, actually, myself and Jazzy Jeff, we were with a group called the Magnificent Seven. The original Funky Four was KK Rockwell, Keith Caesar, Sha-Rock, and Raheem, who eventually moved on to Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, right? Raheem ended up quitting or getting fired. Now, depending on who you talk to, you gonna get a couple of different versions. But at the end of the day, he was out of the group. The girl, Sha-Rock, she quit in protest. Because she didn't want Raheem, you know, to leave the group. So that left KK and Keith. And they began doing auditions, right? FYI, Special K from the Treacherous tried out for the Funky and didn't make it. It's a couple other people that tried out too that, you know, you wouldn't probably know of that didn't make it either.
Now, how did they didn't make it? They couldn't, the rhymes wasn't tight?
I wasn't there. I had nothing to do with their audition process.
Right.
You know what I mean?
But all you got
I
the
know,
word.
All I know is that they didn't make it.
Now, how did Saturday Night Live come to being?
Saturday Night Live came to being because the movie Wild Style originally was supposed to have been a documentary on the Funky Four Plus One More.
Mm.
Right? The guy who produced it, Charlie Ahern, along with Fab Five Freddy. Freddy was running around with a tape. It had Flash on one side, Funky Four on the other side. Deborah Harry from the group Blondie, this is her first introduction to hip hop and hearing a female. Sha-Rock being the first female of hip hop, this is the first female she actually heard, which inspired them to do Rapture. Rapture was a big record for them, right? And to kind of pay us back
for helping them to produce a smash, because Rapture was a smash for the white people. That shit went through the roof. We were making a transition from Enjoy Records to Sugar Hill Records. We got this documentary on the table. Sylvia Robinson doesn't really want us to do this documentary. Why? Because it blows the cover off the lie that she had perpetrated on the world. And the lie that she perpetrated on the world was she created hip hop. Or she's the queen of rap, which was a lie. We had been doing it years before she even found out about it. And then when she found out about it, she wanted to make a record. Okay, fast forwarding, right? This documentary they want to do on us, and she's being reluctant. So basically they use Saturday Night Live as a bargaining chip to get us to be able to do the documentary. She let us do Saturday Night Live because what? It boosted her label, right? And then at the end, when it was time for us to be able to do the documentary, she said, nah, I don't want him to do that. Oh. And that's what ended up causing the split. That's what me and my man KK Rockwell ended up starting forming Double Trouble. And Sha-Rock, Keith, and Jeff, they kept on with the label doing Funky Four.
Wow. I hear that some people say hip-hop started in Bronxdale, like with Disco King, Mario. These guys were bringing the turntables out earlier, 69, 70. How true is that?
Most people have a problem drawing a line in the sand which separates hip hop from disco. Now you said, who started it in Bronxdale?
Disco King Mario.
Say that again.
Disco King Mario.
Okay, his name was Disco. So that lets you know what he was playing.
Right, and they say he wasn't playing breaks or anything like that.
He was playing
disco.
Thank you.
but right, that sums it up. But what they say is the culture of hip hop, of bringing the turntables outside, started with this guy.
Doesn't matter, right? If you go back, Flowers was bringing his turntables out. Divine Sound, right? All of them were doing the same thing. But what was they playing?
They acknowledged that these guys were playing the breaks of the record, but they're saying the whole culture of Fresh Clothes.
Hear me. What kind of music was the Disco Twins, Divine Sound, Flowers? They were playing disco music, right? They had some records, right, that kind of bridged the gap, right? Like a James Brown track can go either or, right? You could be at a discotheque and they play a James Brown record and they still gonna dance, right? But predominantly, the party is a disco party. You get what I'm saying? At a hip hop party, all we playing is breaks. We ain't playing no disco music. We ain't playing none of that flowery, sweet. We ain't playing none of that.
So that is the separation.
There's a lot of things that separate, but you'd have to understand, you know, by being a part of it.
Right.
Now, disco, they didn't play two of the same records because they didn't extend the breakbeat in a disco record. They played it like the radio from the beginning to the end, and they mixed another record with the same BPI, you know what I mean?
Right.
So that's basically what they did. What hip hop did was say, we like this part of the record. How do we extend this part of the record? Oh, we need another one. So we can go from one break to the next break, just keeping that break going. That's a major difference between disco and hip hop.
That sums it up right there. They're basically forming another genre of music by just focusing on the break and keeping that break going, which is unlike disco where they just playing the whole record.
Grandmaster Caz, I think he said it the best. Hip hop didn't invent nothing. It reinvented everything.
Lil Rodney C, Brownsville Old Timers Day, getting some good hip-hop history from one of the pioneers, the cats who birthed and made this shit what it is. So we always pay homage and salute to the pioneers of hip-hop music, wherever they are. We'll never forget these dudes, man. These are our Miles Davis, John Coltrane, and we're not going to let nobody forget these cats who made a music that I have always fucking loved. I grew up with. I had these records in my crib, my pops. We used to play them. We used to make pause tapes and all that. G Moody Podcast live in Brooklyn with my man Lil Rodney C. Thanks, bro.
You're welcome, my brother.
Kick your name. Are you from Brownsville?
Oh, yeah. First and foremost, I'm from East 98th and Lot. So, Brownsville, what's up? Stand up. You know what it is. We selling these nutcrackers out here. We got the Jamaican rum punch. Got 151, some Devil Springs in there. And we got the Patron margaritas mixed with vodka. You know what it is. It's a good time, man. Shout out to the podcast that's going on. Black people always prospering, man. Brownsville forever.
As I continue the podcast, this, that, and the third with G Moody and my man.
It's your boy Alive underscore Music Is Brooklyn. You already know.
Master Ace is flipping. Your grip is slipping. It's time I start stripping. Young ladies and the titles that hold them. I treat them like a pretzel. Bend, stretch, and fold them. And I can do the same damage on stage. Black, white, or beige. You're going to feel the
okay, this, that, and the third with G Moody live in Brownsville. Brownsville Old Timers Day. You know I'm from Brownsville. And, of course, we got a lot of famous cats who have made their way in the world. So I'm with one, World B Free, Hall of Famer, All-Star NBA. You know this cat. Mad points in the league. Everybody knows his game. He's a Brownsville guy. So I wanted to talk to World about growing up in Brownsville. What makes it special to you? And what was your experience growing up in Brownsville?
Well, I'll tell you, Daryl, my experience in Brownsville was very good. It was hard, it was tough. You know, we had to compete. We had, at my era, in my time, we had such great players as James Fly Williams. We had Phil the Thrill Sellers from Rutgers University. And, you know, it was always at that time we had to go ahead and compete against each other to see who was going to be, I guess, the king of New York, you know what I mean? So it was the thing that we respected each other, especially when we played against each other. It was like you're playing against an NBA team. And I talked to George Iceman Gervin, that played with Fly. I talked with the guys who heard of Fly, you know, and I know it's not a Fly thing, but this guy was just unbelievable, man, on the basketball court. He was 6'5", he had all the long arms. He had everything that an athlete has nowadays.
Right, okay. Now, World, in your time in the league, you was giving it to a lot of cats. Who was the guy that you said, yo, this guy, you know, it's kind of tough to guard? Who was that guy where you could look back and say, that cat?
Well, that cat was Michael Jordan. That cat was George Iceman Gervin. That cat was a couple of cats back right then. You know what I mean? So it's the list. So I had to go ahead and make sure that they had at least five guys.
Brownsville Old Timers Day talking to World B in Brownsville. Now, World, what do you think of the trades that went on with Westbrook going to Houston, and how is that going to work considering Mike D'Antoni has basically given his blessings to James Harden to just basically forget about his teammates?
It's going to be something totally different. See, when you're in Brownsville, you're going to hear it all. So I'm just letting you know. You can have an interview, but this is a real interview, Gerald. So I'm just letting you know I'm happy here.
That's right.
And the thing is, and to get back to where we're going at, it's a tough job. But you just have to compete, and you have to do what you have to do. Both of those guys, you got two legends in their field. You know, it's going to be tough. And if Westbrook give up the basketball a little bit more, you know what I mean? And if James Harden gives up the basketball a little bit more, they'll be all right.
Now, you're known for being a great shooter. Now, I had the pleasure of, you know, coming out to the park. World B used to come out, you know, after the NBA season, he used to be playing in the park. So the competition had to be up there so, you know, he would play with these guys. So I seen this dude jump shots all over the place, floating in the rim, a lot of drama in the air, and it going through without hitting the rim. So this brings me to this. I think Steph Curry is the greatest I've ever seen as far as shooting the basketball. You are a great shooter. Give me your top three, top two, not including you.
Well, you'll get Steph Curry in there. You can get guys like Steve Kerr in there, Jeff Hunisak. We can even take it further back, and I don't want to go there, for people probably wouldn't even know these guys' names, but it's a whole lot of great shooters that throughout my time that I played with. But Steph Curry is definitely in the top five, you know, because he's took the range out a little bit further. And to tell you the truth, that guys were shooting out there. But those shots back in them days were bad shots, even though they were going in, you know. But people were like, well, I can't believe he's taking a shot from out there, but it's going in consecutively, right. You know. But, you know, when it came to the way television and what you have to do to hype things up nowadays, and not taking nothing from the athlete's making a hell of a shots. You know what I mean? You can't take nothing away from that. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, you know, you might get a little bump on those shots back in the days. You know what I mean? It wouldn't be this. You wouldn't have that much distance.
Right. So the game is officiated differently.
Yeah, it has to be. You know what I mean? Because at one time, that's why you had to go ahead and tap touch fouls and all that in the game. Because the fact that before that, if you can touch people, the games was like 79 to 80. You know, now when you had these touch fouls being in the game, now you got 10 points, 15 points more in the game. So it looks like, you know, it's 100 points in the game, but it's a different, it's the same kind of game, but it's different.
Wow. What about homeboy with the jumper, Ben Simmons? Are you working with him?
No, I'm not working with him, but he's in Australia right now, and he's playing in that Australian league. And we've been seeing him at practice, and I see that his shot is becoming a lot better than what it was. Not great. But you got to understand, I played against Magic his first 5 years in the league. Magic, when he first came in the league, Magic can do just like Ben Simmons, get to the hole and do all the freaky stuff. Magic never had a jump shot. Kareem told Magic, look, hey, all you don't have to shake and bake like Allen Iverson. All you have to do is go ahead and spot up, get yourself a spot, and hit that shot. You know what I mean? Take 100 of those shots in the corner. Take 100 of those shots from the free throw line. You know what I mean? This will better your game, and it will help me. You know what I mean? So therefore, when they do double team me, as Kareem, they were double teaming him, he'll throw it out to Magic, and Magic had enough confidence 3 years, you know, in the league to go ahead and start hitting that shot. Because his first two was terrible.
Really? You're like, he couldn't really shoot. Right, right.
You
right.
Look at the percentages, so it'll tell you that myself.
You're in Brownsville. My dog.
So, World B, I don't want to take much of your time, but thank you, man. This is Cat. I grew up watching playing basketball. Coming outside, I seen World B, made me, watching him play basketball made me think, damn, if I play, I can play like that. So just beautiful watching you play, man, when I was growing up. And thank you for doing this shit for me right now. This, that, and the third with G Moody live.
G Moody.
Brownsville Old Thomas.
G Moody.
With World B Free.
A great event that really is always here every year. It's been going on for decades with Old Timers Day. It's not only it brings back community, but it brings back togetherness. It's great to see a lot of people that really lived in the community, still live in the community, and come back. It's about community. It's about really showing peace and love, and really teaching the younger generation what it's all about community. And never forgetting where you come from. It's about establishing your roots and never really giving that up. And it's to pass on a legacy of love, work, togetherness, hard work, and about the rich history in Brooklyn and in Brownsville and East New York. We had great people that have really risen and came out of these communities, and I'm here to really just absorb and appreciate that. And I really appreciate the time and thank God for all of those years and time to even be here now.
That's it. That puts a cap on it. Thanks to Vaughn Lee for telling us what it really is about. Thank you, man. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity.